Now, if you're a parent, what does your household's week look like? Not the weekends, not Sundays like we were just talking about, but those weekdays. Here's what's happening at one Australian family's house.
See ya.
Tensions in this household are high as both Lisa and Andy fit full-time work around after-school activities. The kids need ferrying to and from. School band, rugby, piano, gymnastics, dance classes, touch football, drum lessons and netball.
Is there ever a day you wake up and think, I just don't think I can do this?
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. All school days.
Yeah, I don't actually wake up and say I can't do this. I wake up and I go, okay, well, it's a whole new day and it's even more stuff than yesterday.
Do you think that it's a question of activities or boredom?
I think there's a little bit of me that wants my kids to be really good at lots of things and have options in life. There is a little bit of an element of that.
Yeah, there's a little bit of all of us.
Yeah. I guess you kind of refer back to your own childhood and think, well, I didn't get that opportunity, and now we're in a position we can give our kids those opportunities. So I may have just gone a little bit overboard on that.
Yeah, gone a little bit overboard. That's mother of two, Lisa Croft. And when did all those extracurricular activities become a compulsory part of childhood? We're wondering. For many, the outcome of this frantic effort to demonstrate parenting prowess is a frazzled family. In fact, over 60% of Australian kids apparently now get their exercise from structured activities with little time left over for just free play, being bored. Remember that what that felt like on summer holidays? Well, enter Carl Honoré. He's a Canadian journalist and an advocate of the slow movement, as it's dubbed. He's the author of In Praise of Slow and also Under Pressure, Rescuing Our Children from the Culture of Hyperparenting. Carl put three heavily scheduled Australian families through the slow fix plan, and the outcome you'll see on ABC television tomorrow night, that's Tuesday. Two of the parents appearing in Frantic Family Rescue are Lisa Croft, she's mother of 11-year-old Freya and 10-year-old Theo, we just heard from her, and Glenn Schofield, he's father of 15-year-old twins Jaden and Luke and 14-year-old Kiralee, and they all joined me a little earlier with Carl Honoré, who was on a very echoey Skype line.
Good morning, good to be with you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Carl, what is this culture of hyper-parenting that you talk about?
Well, I think it starts from a noble and natural instinct, which is to do the best for our children, which is the ultimate no-brainer. How can you argue with that? I think the trouble is that over the last generation, that instinct has morphed into a caricature of itself, so that now as parents, and I speak as a parent myself, I know how this works. You know, we feel under immense pressure to push, polish, and protect our children with superhuman zeal. We feel we have to give them the best of everything and at the same time make them the best at everything. And it's almost like on the front line of modern parenting that raising a child or child rearing has become a game of all or nothing, that there are only two tracks spreading out in front of your newborn baby when he or she comes out of the womb. And there's track one, the uber track, where we all feel we have to be, which is, you know, Mensa age 9, I don't know, Harvard at 18, and then Sunday Times Rich List at 25, or track two, where nobody wants to be, which is, you know, hoodie, heroin addiction, and homelessness, right?
And there's nothing in between.
We know that there are many things in between, but I think that as parents, when we're lying in bed at night, wondering if we're doing enough as a mother or father, or sitting around the kitchen table with our partner, and the winds of panic start to swirl, it can feel like it's all or nothing, and that there's only one way to do it right. And if we don't get on that train, our children will be left behind, and we will have failed them. And I think this has created a culture of panic, really, and anxiety for parents, so that they feel that there is only one way to do it, and if they don't do it, they're thrown in the towel. And I guess that's what I'm trying to tackle here, is to say that there are many different ways to parent and many different ways for families to grow up and for children to thrive. And it's not just about being faster, busier, and more.
As the conversation unfolds, we'll talk about where those pressures come from. But where did this particular obsession of yours with families winding back, slowing down, start for you and your family? Because it was a very distinct track that you were on too at some stage.
Yes, as I say, I'm a father of two. My children are now 16 and 13. But you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, I found myself succumbing to the same virus of parental panic. And my moment of truth came at a parent-teacher evening when my child was in year two. So my son was about 7 years old, I guess. And a lot of parents will recognize the scenario. You know, I was perched on one of those low plastic seats waiting for the teacher to drop a pearl of praise in my lap, something that would allow me to exhale, right? Because we're all so worried, we're all so clenched about our children. And the feedback was good, but there was nothing stellar until I went to the art room and the art teacher was falling over herself with praise and saying, oh, Mr. Honore, your son is so imaginative, he's so creative. Look up there on the wall, I have one of his sketches. I have it as a model for all the pupils in the school. And of course, inside, my inner tiger dad is saying, yes, this is exactly what I want here. You know, bring it on. And the teacher then dropped what I think of as the G-bomb. She said, Mr. Honore, your son is a gifted young artist. And there it was, that six-letter word, gifted, that I think to a modern parent is a bit like the Holy Grail and also like a red rag to a bull. And all I could hear in that moment was the word gifted and my son's name, you know, up in neon. And I did what a lot of parents would do in that circumstance. I ran home, not very slowly, as you said, hopped on Google and started looking for an art tutor or a drawing professor or a sketching clinic, something that could take this gift and polish it up so the whole world could see it gleam. And I found the perfect guy. He lived two streets away, glowing testimonials on his website. Went to bed that night, convinced that the next Picasso was sleeping in the room next door. And then, of course, the next day, the whole thing just blew up in my face because I was walking to school with my son and I said, you know what, I found this art tutor who's going to help you bring your A game to year two art. And my son just looked at me like I was from outer space and he said, you know, I don't want a tutor. I just want to draw.
Oh.
And then he asked me the question that really hit me in the solar plexus. He said, why do grown-ups always have to take over everything? And I suddenly, it was one of those horrifying moments of epiphany when you suddenly see yourself in sharp relief from the side, and what I saw there was just ugly and unedifying. I realized that he was right, that I was trying to take over his artistic developments for my own reasons rather than for his reasons. And that was the starting point for traveling all around the world and spending time investigating where we are with child rearing and parenting and spending a lot of time in schools and sports clinics and all that stuff and coming back with the idea that there's room for slowing down in many families nowadays and that we would all be happier, healthier, and our children fulfill their potential more if we reconnected with our inner tortoise.
That's beautiful, isn't it? The inner tortoise. Carlon Honore is with us this morning. He's a slow living advocate, and he's the presenter of a program called Frantic Family Rescue. Three families who are frantic are the subjects of this story, and Carl is there to help them change their lives radically. Now, Glenn Schofield is one of them. He's the father of 15-year-old twins Jaden and Luke and 14-year-old Kira Lee. Why were you willing to take this experiment? It started with your 14-year-old daughter Kira Lee initiating contact with Carl for this show, I think.
Yes. I'm not sure if she was very insightful into our over-busy lives or whether she just wanted to get her mug on TV. I've never actually asked her, but she came home from school and said that there's this documentary happening and they wanted families who were busy to sign up, and could we? And I like to support whatever their inspirations are, so I said, sure. But I said, I'm not writing to them, you'll have to. And so she wrote an email to the company who did the documentary, and I got a call from them the next day saying, look, we've had a lot of parents ring us up, but we haven't had many kids contact us and tell us about their busy lives. What's going on?
What was going on?
Look, I was laughing listening to Carl describe it, because in retrospect, I don't think I ever did the reflection that he did as a younger parent. I just kept signing up to everything until I was exhausted at the end of the day. And I've been to the swim club where there's parents dragging kids out of the car to get into the pool, and that was just never our equation. All we did was throw opportunity at them and see what sticks. The problem was everything stuck. And so we were signed up to, I think at our peak we had 17 hours of extracurricular activities a week, and even the principal said 10's probably
too
maxed
much
out. Yeah.
I mean, so water polo, swim squad, debating, rowing, cross country, the list goes on and on and on.
Triathlon, and that's not kind to time either.
Oh.
And I did have some, like Carl mentioned about, oh my God, the gifted words come out, I've got to track it down and take over this. I wasn't looking quite to take over, but I myself had really enjoyed the social side of sport. Mm. I was pretty average at everything, but I participated in everything. And I also had a lot of respect for those kids that were just a little bit more capable or talented. So I had this view when I was younger parent that, you know, maybe if one of those kids could achieve something in a sport somewhere, they might have a reasonable self-esteem as they walk around the schoolyard. And so we threw them at a few sports and tapered towards ones where they did better. And eventually they were going way beyond my expectations of maybe getting to a state level, but, you know, getting to a national level. And that's when I thought, well, I've got to step out of here and let them decide what they want to do.
Interesting,
but,
isn't
but
it?
I needed Carl to help do that, and I think we have made some adjustments since we did the experiment, because we're probably on a crash course of self-destruction. I don't know.
Yes, well, I'll come back to you on that and how you went, and, of course, we won't give it all away so people can watch the program. But Lisa Croft, mum of 11-year-old Freya and 10-year-old Theo.
Yes.
So you've just been walking along the beach this morning. You got up at 6:30 and you're now doing this every day to see the sunrise. How different is that from where life was at for you and Freya and Theo and your husband?
I'd say very different. We were very frantic. I felt very overladen with activities and work, and there was a lot of shouting in the morning, and it was not enjoyable. We now set the alarm. We all go to bed earlier. Yeah, Freya and I getting up at 6:30 in the morning, watching the sunrise, having a bit of family bonding. Andy goes and does a paper run with Theo 4 mornings a week, and the dog gets a walk, and we're all much happier.
It still sounds pretty high pressure to me. You could just stay under the doona until, you know, 7:30 instead of getting up and marching along a beach to see the sunrise. That's pretty driven.
Yeah, look, but part of my interest in the program was possibly a little bit different to maybe even what Carl expected, but I wanted to get back to a bit of organic living and more family connection. I felt that we were very disconnected as a family, and we were only a family of 4, but we both worked full-time. We slotted the kids into extracurricular activities initially, I think, to kind of alleviate them having to go and sit at out-of-school care. Mm. And I wanted to set my kids up for success so that they were good at things, and while we were at work, it would alleviate my guilt as a working mother. And, you know, we weren't seeing much of our kids, and they were enjoying their activities. They're both, Freya was doing dance and netball, and they had lots of football, and but as a family, we weren't very together.
So you were ready and prepared to take this challenge by the sounds?
Very much so.
And your husband as well?
Yeah, he was very open to it. The kids were fine until Carl mentioned no devices.
And that was, we'll come to the 5 commandments of slow with Carl, but the top one is all screens off at home for a month. Mm. And Freya took exception to that because she was truly addicted to her little screen.
Absolutely. And I would say we now have no screen time. In fact, what's funny, I wonder, Carl, if you might have done something to our antenna when you were there, because not long after the program, we lost access to television. So we actually don't have television anymore at all.
Spoiler alert.
Carl, are you to blame here?
I think that must be the gods of slow intervening.
Well, speaking of the gods of slow pointing their fingers down at us all, you have 5 commandments. Let's explore those 5 and what the rationale for them is. We've got the all screens off at home for a month.
Let's start with the all screen off. Yeah, that is quite an extreme commandment nowadays, let's be honest. And my children, who are both in their teens, social media, and I know how hard that is. And in fact, this is one of the paradoxes of this whole slow experiment, is that in a way, because it was all done in a month, we've tried to slow people down fast, right? It's almost like the shock and awe fast version of slow. So in a sense, the aim was to give people a taste of what it would be like to embrace a slower way of doing things. So you come to technology, instead of just doing little baby steps and saying week 1, you have 1 hour without your gadgets, we're just going to come in and say, this is it, you know, everything off for the month. I wouldn't suggest that that's something that most families would feel comfortable living with full time. But because we only had the month for the TV program, it made sense just to go for it, you know, to swing for the fences.
And to remove kids from their smartphones is like severing them from their social network. And that's quite cruel in many ways, especially as kids aren't able to just get out there at night in the way that they might have, or, you know, wander around with their bikes after school in the way that they did in the past. So social media is the sort of more confined way that kids reach out to each other.
Exactly. And I'm not against social media. I use it myself. I think it can be a hugely diverting and entertaining and enriching way of building, you know, friendships and social bonds. Of course, it's a great thing. But if it's your only channel of communication with your friends, and it crowds out, or the family schedule is crowding out all of those other forms of meeting up in the real world, just hanging out face to face, talking without a screen intervening, then I think something is not right. And that's kind of where I think we are as a society, is working out how to get the right balance with these gadgets. You know, we replace those social media moments, those tech and screen moments, with slower activities like the walking on the beach and seeing a sunset. And that's obviously stuck with Lisa and her family. So that doesn't mean that they haven't gone back. And Freya, I can imagine Freya may even right now be on her, you know, phone looking at a Snapchat message. But that doesn't mean that she's also got that, you know, she's come back from a half an hour walking on the beach with Lisa. So she's got a bit of both, which is really the aim of slow and those commandments. It's all
so,
about.
So let's come to just another one, and we might not get through them all, but the other one that was very confronting for these parents was drop all extracurricular activities for the children except for one. And the family that we're not meeting today, Anna, mother of 8-year-old Frankie, 4-year-old Janie, well, she was incredibly confronted by that because she had scheduled Frankie's life within an inch of itself.
He was racking up, I think, 13, 14-hour days. So he was a busy boy. And yes, Anna found it very hard to, even for the month, you know, just to take 1 month to step back and dial down the extracurricular needle. She found that very difficult. And I don't think it's surprising. I don't think Anna is alone in that. I think a lot of parents would find that very challenging because they've become so accustomed to living their lives in that busy mode. Mm. The extracurricular thing has come to define who they are as parents and how they see their family. They may have spent quite a lot of money on those activities as well, and even just letting it go for a month can pinch and hurt. And I think that underscores just how deep that extracurricular culture runs now, the idea that children have to be structured at all times, and that if they're not doing something that is cost money, is supervised by adults and can be packaged and placed on a resume somewhere, that somehow that's not valuable, that free play time, when of course all of the science shows that it's immensely valuable and it's an important part of a balanced childhood diet.
Well, what does the science tell us about free play? Because so much of our childhood was about free play. It was unaccounted for time. It was just thinking time, imagining time, exploring time.
Exactly. And I think that's the way childhood has been throughout human history. It's really just shifted very acutely in the last generation, so that we've moved away from that slow, unstructured, free-range childhood to a childhood that's highly structured, where every moment of a child's day is supervised, organized, benchmarked, evaluated, probably photographed and filmed as well. And it means that children haven't got that, what Virginia Woolf used to talk about, talked about the great cathedral space that was childhood, that feeling of openness, capaciousness, endless horizons that we all remember ourselves as parents, as children. You went out in the morning, you just played, you got together with the kids in the neighborhood, you invented games, you learned how to socialize, you learned how to take pleasure from things, and then your mom would just, you know, shout at lunch and you'd come back and you'd be back out again. And we know from the science that that kind of free, unstructured play is in many ways the best form of learning. You know, that's a lot of the richest learning goes on, and the best building of the human brain occurs then, and actually even something like boredom. We're all terrified of boredom nowadays, but throughout human history, when a child came to a parent and said, "I'm bored," you know, that was the child's problem. Right? Parents would say, "Oh, go outside, you know, use your imagination." You remember that phrase, use your imagination? Now a child comes to a parent and says, "I'm bored," and it's the parent's fault. Suddenly as a parent, you think, "Oh no, my child is bored, I'm failing. Maybe we need another extracurricular activity in the schedule. Where's the iPad?" Instead of just backing off, letting boredom happen. And it's when we allow boredom, moments of quiet, of free play, of restlessness, of not being sure what's coming next, of having to fall back on your own devices, that's when children's brains are on fire, right? That's when they're building their brains in ways that 100 educational DVDs or thousands of hours of Kumon tutoring will never, ever come close to touching. And also we're afraid, you touched on it earlier, people are afraid of the outside. We've lost the sense of community. We open our door and we think that our neighborhoods are just great cesspits full of pedophiles and drunk drivers, and that if we let our children out of our sight for 5 minutes, they'll be, you know, kidnapped. And when in fact, actually, the truth is that our cities are safer than they've ever been. But still, as parents, and I know this fear, I felt it myself. You think, oh no, I can't let my children walk to school on their own until they're 29. Right?
Well, Glenn Schofield, have you allowed a little bit of boredom back into your lives, perhaps, since doing this program?
I don't think we've reached that point. I'd like to get there.
Would you?
Just listening to Carl describe the free play, and even though we're gradually unpacking the life of scheduled events. We're still somewhat married to that work hard, play hard ideology that seems so popular these days. And I mean, growing up, I lived in the country, and my father took me camping and canoeing on weekends, and there's nothing as serene as paddling quietly down a pond on a river, you know, 20 kilometres from the nearest civilization. And I have no experiences like that in our family life right now. But as we do unpack things and create more free space, the kids are pretty good at filling it with their own imagination, and we have embarked on that journey. But some of my responsibilities that I've taken on in committees and things won't end till the end of the year, and I'm hoping to sort of halve my level of commitments and scheduled activities so that I can have more canoeing moments.
Yeah, so you need to wind back on your own schedule as well. What is the biggest change that's happened in your household, do you think?
I think when we went into the experiment, I didn't realise how hectic we were living. I was just so busy in pursuit of the next goalpost, I don't think I was aware of how busy we were.
Mm.
And so I think just discussing that and backing off, and my wife quite likes a slower pace, and she's reminded me a few times since Carl left the shores, you know, don't you remember what Carl said? Things like that.
Oh, right. But he's now become the little voice hanging over your shoulders in the household.
Right, yeah, the family psychologist.
Lisa Croft, what about yourself? Is there a little bit more boredom? Certainly the walks in the morning, but have you come together as a family in a different kind of way?
Definitely. And the no screen, having no television on just as a standard, as a given, it's not on anymore. There's a lot more talking around the table. Carl, you said a minute ago, Braille's probably on Snapchat, and I just want to interject, but she was standing in front of me. I'm parked at the beach, and she was doing handstands and then sat down and did freestyle yoga. We've come a long way. We did drop some extracurricular activities this year, and so it's definitely less frantic of racing here, got to be there, got to be, you know, pick up this person. Theo's still doing football, Freya's still doing dance, but we did let a few things slide because it was too much. Yeah, I think generally we're less stressed.
How wonderful. Final question to you, Carla Honoré. If there's one thing that a family could do to just confront the fear that seems to be implicit in creating unaccounted for time in their weekly schedule, what would it be?
One little lever to pull.
Yeah, one little lever, just as a starting point.
Yeah. You know what? The thing that I've found most joyful and simple and free is doing puzzles. And I think puzzles are a wonderful metaphor for good slow.
Mm.
You put up with, and I did this with all the families as well in the program, is you just create a space at the end of the kitchen table and you put a 1,000-piece puzzle out. And I find in my family that it just becomes this focal point of slow. And there's, you're not, again, it's not, there's no achievement in a puzzle. It's not striving. It's not competitive. It can feel a little restless and lacking in stimulation, but it actually becomes this oasis of zen. And one person will sit down and do it for 10 minutes. Someone else will sit there. And I have some of the best conversations with my children while we're puzzling. And especially if my adolescent son, they become less talkative at that age. But you know, he'll sit there and do the puzzle. I just think that something, find some activity that is serene, relaxing, and just allows the family to come together in a decompressed, simple human way. And I just want to throw in one other thing as well. We've talked a lot about boredom. I don't want people to go away thinking that slow parenting is about boredom.
That's right. An uninteresting life.
No, I mean, boredom is more like a kind of staging post or a stepping stone to a much more rich, creative, and fun and engaged life. It just, you have to let it happen. Boredom, yes, and the good things that leads to, but also to spontaneity, because that's something I think we found very much with Glenn's family, is that everything was so structured that they kind of lost that sense of just being able to go with the moment and just go. And I think that was something they seemed to enjoy bringing back. And it's something that most families do re-welcome with a big relief, you know, thinking that they can just arrive at a certain time and think, you know what, let's go for a bike ride.
Gee, what a wonderful thing. And I must say, some of the best holidays I've had, we've cracked open a big 1,000-piece jigsaw puzzle, and it's been as a glass of wine and you're gathering together. And mind you, it can be incredibly competitive as well.
Competitive, fast puzzling.
Exactly. Look, thank you all of you. What wonderful wisdom to share with you this morning. And I'm looking forward to seeing the full program. Carl Honoré, thank you for joining us there in London on Skype. And Lisa Croft and Glenn Schofield, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Carl's book is In Praise of Slow, and another one, Under Pressure, Rescuing Our Children from the Culture of Hyperparenting. And he's the presenter of Frantic Family Rescue. It screens tomorrow night, that's Tuesday night, at 9:20 on ABC television. We'll put details on the Life Matters website of all that. And it is very interesting to see what happens to those families and why they've chosen to take on his slow challenge. Do you think it's realistic? Yeah, we'd like to hear from you on our website. And if you've had a go at doing that, if you've had a go at stripping back your action-packed weeks, what have the kids done instead? How did they use their time? Get on our Facebook page or our listener feedback line. We'd love to hear from you, 02 833 1430, or our website.